KALW.
You cannot say that you're focused on equity and cut hundreds of classes without having conversations with faculty, with students.
Abrupt class cuts at City College of San Francisco have city leaders asking hard questions.
We're trying to give you money. We're trying to help with this. And if you're making it hard for even for us to have your back, that's raising a lot of other questions for a lot of people in the community.
How CCSF class cuts are impacting vulnerable students, including students of color. Then some social media users are good at talking the talk, but
just starting the conversation isn't enough. And that's a problem.
We're talking about slacktivism on TBH. It's our new podcast made by, for, and about teenagers. I'm Henat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. In late November, City College of San Francisco eliminated more than 300 class offerings overnight. The chancellor cut them from the spring schedule right before registration, citing a budget deficit. Those class cuts came on the heels of hundreds of others over the past 2 years. But this time, administrators acted behind closed doors without consulting academic chairs, students, or city leaders. Those protesting the cuts say the very identity of the community college is at stake. Now, if City College in crisis sounds familiar, it is.
New at 5, the future of City College in San Francisco is in jeopardy. After years of scrutiny, the Accrediting Commission for Community and Junior Colleges issued a drastic decision tonight, telling City College it's revoking its accreditation.
It's only been 3 years since City College emerged from a long accreditation battle, but the bigger fight is ongoing about how the college can stay solvent and whether its core values are at risk. KLW education reporter Lee Romney takes us into the fray.
About 36 people are gathered on the steps of City Hall on this late January morning.
Who wants to carry this one? These cuts won't heal.
My name is Marcos Cruz. I'm a student organizer at City College. We are out here in front of City Hall for a press conference and rally.
Once that's done, they'll head into City Hall for a hearing about how those recent class cuts are affecting low-income students and students of color. City College, or CCSF, is an important institution to San Francisco. It's historically been a haven for all kinds of students.
In my class, there are bus drivers, there are teachers, there are nurses, there are bartenders, there's a parent who was formerly homeless. And these spaces are sacred. These spaces must be protected.
Some students focus on 4-credit classes to earn certificates or associate degrees or transfer to 4-year universities. Others may take classes just for the love of it or to sharpen their skills so they can get better jobs in a city where the wealth gap is growing.
I'm wearing a button that says, "We are all City College," with a little heart, because before the accreditation crisis happened, there were about 80,000 students at the college, which means that 1 in 8 people in San Francisco was connected to City College, either directly or indirectly.
The accreditation crisis lasted for 5 years, and the more uncertain things seemed, the more enrollment dropped. That affected state funding, and accreditors had already identified problems with college finances. But the bigger battle was about more than that. The chancellor of the state community college system, accreditors, and state legislators were pushing a definition of student success that didn't really fit with the CCSF ethos of serving everyone, including lifelong learners. Instead, it focused on measurable outcomes, like how many students got certificates or associate degrees, how quickly they graduated, and the transfer rate to 4-year universities. And that is even more true today. In fact, the way the state funds community colleges is about to change to incentivize schools to place more students in that graduation pipeline. City College Chancellor Mark Rocha has said he made the latest class cuts with that new state funding formula in mind. He also said his main goal was to, quote, prioritize the graduation of students of color. That notion that the cuts are in the best interest of students of color, it doesn't sit well with a lot of students and faculty.
Whose college?
Our college!
Whose city?
Our city.
Whose city?
Our city.
When classes are under attack, what do we do?
Ramona Coates is here at the rally. She's the former chair of African American Studies at City College. She's now part-time. In fact, today, the department has no full-time faculty, and class offerings have dropped from 8 to 4.
Students of color find themselves, their identity, their history, their hope, their future, their self-worth, when they take ethnic studies, social justice, African American studies courses.
It turns out other ethnic studies programs, along with women and gender studies, have been shrinking too. Fewer classroom offerings, more online.
Online is fantastic, but not everybody can learn the way they need to online. They need that communal interaction with faculty. They need that.
This whole question of who is being helped and who is being harmed by the cuts is actually the focus of today's hearing inside City Hall. It's a joint meeting of members of the Board of Supervisors, San Francisco Unified School District Commissioners, and City College trustees. They want to understand the impact not just on students of color, but on low-income students, older students, and high school students who need City College classes to graduate. Supervisor Shimon Walton called for today's hearing. He says mostly they want transparency.
You cannot say that you're focused on equity and cut hundreds of classes without having conversations with faculty, without having conversations with students, without having conversations of other leadership in San Francisco.
Yes.
Walton's already introduced an ordinance to give $2.7 million to City College to restore the classes that were just cut. It passed on a 7-4 vote just a few days before this hearing. But City College Chancellor Rocha has told the mayor and the supervisors he doesn't want the money, that he stands by the cuts as necessary belt tightening. Mayor London Breed has indicated she'll veto. All of that is the backdrop to today's hearing.
How you doing? Good. That's fine. You could leave it like that. Just open it for me. And any signs or posters?
No.
We all head inside, filing through security.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, you're good.
Yeah.
Supervisor Haney.
Present.
Haney present. Supervisor Fewer.
This hearing is important for city leaders who want CCSF to reverse these class cuts. Because if the city doesn't learn more about why the college did what it did and who will suffer as a result, convincing the mayor to hand over the money will be tough. But the associate vice chancellor who shows up to represent City College, Terrence Bynum, he doesn't come with any data.
We focus on students transferring to the UCs and the state system.
Instead, he reads from the college mission statement about that double-down focus on moving students towards graduation.
We also have a great emphasis on basic skills.
Supervisors and SFUSD commissioners on this committee have been waiting for more than a month for specifics. They are not happy.
We really need hard data so we can say that if we don't fund this, this is who is going to be hurt.
And numbers is something that I would like to see. I would like to see numbers by group.
And here we are at the Board of Supervisors in the city, and we're trying to give you money. We're trying to help with this. We want to have your back. And if you're making it hard for even for us to have your back, that's raising a lot of other questions for a lot of people in the community.
City College is struggling financially. A recent audit called out a pattern of deficit spending, and reserves have fallen below the minimum levels set by the state chancellor. After the accreditation crisis, San Franciscans stepped up to help, approving parcel taxes. State lawmakers passed legislation that funneled extra money to City College until 2017. City College trustee Alex Randolph points out, it's time to face reality.
You know, in the past, we've budgeted on projections and ideas. The students will come back, enrollment will be better, we'll be able to get our expenses down. That hasn't come.
Enrollment did get a bounce when the city kicked in to make CCSF tuition free for San Francisco residents, but it's nowhere near what it once was. And the faculty union says by cutting highly enrolled classes, the chancellor is now driving enrollment down. Non-credit classes for older adults took a huge hit, and lots of credit classes got cut too. When it's time for public comment, It's clear there's a lot of pain to go around.
I have enjoyed taking classes in music appreciation, computer literacy, and Tai Chi.
My class is the figure drawing class.
My class, Political 45, the Politics of the Middle East, was a certificate that I was expecting to complete.
There has been a concern about certificates being cut.
Administrators canceled our entire non-credit self-defense program. So who does that affect? We know our non-credit students are low income.
Before the meeting ends, City College pledges to dig up that data. Supervisor Walton says the committee will meet again once that happens. Meanwhile, students, faculty, and their union, AFT Local 2121, start lobbying Mayor London Breed heavily not to veto that $2.7 million for City College to reverse those class cuts. But on Friday, February 14th, she vetoes it anyway. In her veto message, she says, quote, using general fund reserve dollars as a Band-Aid for long-term structural problems does not help City College. In San Francisco, I'm Lee Romney for Cross Currents.
Lee Romney is KALW's education reporter. You can find more of her stories at kalw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Next up, it's time for TBH, KALW's new podcast made by, about, and for high schoolers and anybody else who wants to hear what's on their minds. Honestly. Here's the host, Oakland Youth Poet Laureate Samuel Getacho.
This is TBH. I'm Samuel Getacho. This podcast is made by, about, and for teenagers, and for anybody else who wants to hear what's on our minds. Today's topic is social consciousness and the difference between activism and slacktivism. I personally have a very complicated relationship with the term activist. As someone who has some experience with community organizing, I have trouble accepting it as a label for myself, partially because I feel like I simply haven't earned it. It feels like a heavy title. And it's one that I've recently stopped claiming because it seems to carry so many implications, especially now. There's a quote I really like from Winter Brienne, a young organizer and a friend of mine. She always says that she isn't an activist, she's just active, because activist feels like a title that has to be earned, while just being active is something that anyone can do. With the newfound potential for virality that the internet has created, the activist world has become more accessible, yes, but it has also begun to draw more and more people who seem to be seeking clout over impact. And something that surprised me in the time that I've spent in so-called activist spaces is how many of the people we revere as activists don't actually have any tangible goals or impact. They just post a lot. Slacktivism is largely possible because of social media, so let's bring it back to social media. We got stories from over 100 San Francisco high school students about how they think they interact with their phones. And we'll hear from a few right now who've had some positive experiences.
Hello, my name is Cameron Hutchinson, and I am a junior attending Abraham Lincoln High School. The biggest effect of social media is the connectedness I feel because I am aware on what my friends and peers are doing around me. It informs us on the latest news and stories, which we can use for discussion with our friends. I specifically use Instagram to consume news and information around me.
My name is Pretty Sims, and I go to Galileo, and I'm a sophomore. So my story is when I was 11, my dad got me an iPhone 6, and I didn't really know what to do at first. I just had it, and I was just like, what should I do? And so I saw I had YouTube, so I started out by watching vloggers, and it like made me figure out what I thought was funny. And then as I got older, I started watching makeup videos and stuff like that, like tutorials on drawing and guitar and music as well. And yeah, it helped me express myself and figure out who I was.
My name is Fu Vo. I am a sophomore at Burton High School. Once at a doctor appointment, I was 10 years old and my doctor told me that I was obese. My parents didn't care less that I was obese because they thought I was fine the way I was. I felt worried about my health, but I didn't know how to properly take care of myself. When I first started trying to lose weight, I just basically starved myself because that was all I knew. So I looked up on YouTube how to lose weight. After using what I learned from YouTube, I noticed a decrease in weight and surprisingly an increase in muscle. Now I go to the gym 6 times a week and researching about exercise and nutrition became my hobby.
Social media is also an easier way to connect to people. I can just text the people I want to talk to instead of having to go to their house or send mail. So social media simply just made life easier, and yes, I do use social media too much, but it's for a good cause.
Social media has revolutionized how activists get messages out into the world. The Black Lives Matter and Me Too movements both began as hashtags. But many of the people who post on Instagram or tweet about social justice online have no plans to join protests or organize offline. Their passive posting is just hashtag activism, or slacktivism. Chosong Tenzin is one of my classmates at Oakland Technical High School. She sought to understand the difference between being woke behind a screen and being woke in real life.
You could say seeming woke sells. Market research shows that young people support companies with a purpose. The razor company Gillette released an ad calling out toxic masculinity. And a lot of people found this message empowering.
And there will be no going back. Because we believe in the best in men.
Men need to hold other men accountable.
Smile, sweetie. Come on.
But others wondered what razors had to do with the Me Too movement. Then there was that infamous Pepsi commercial. Kendall Jenner hands a cop a Pepsi during a protest. The cop cracks open the drink and the crowd cheers. This was mocked on Saturday Night Live.
Look, I gotta go. I'm on the set of my Pepsi commercial. I stopped the police from shooting black people by handing them a Pepsi. I know, it's cute, right?
Martin Luther King Jr.'s daughter responded with a tweet saying, "If only daddy would have known about the power of hashtag Pepsi." Some people I know are blatantly fake woke. I've heard people I know make homophobic slurs, then they'd post photos of themselves at the Pride Parade on Instagram. I was frustrated and angry. A lot of students at Oakland Tech feel the pressure to seem politically aware. After the Parkland shooting, I joined thousands of students for the national walkout against gun violence.
I want to do a really quick activity. Can you raise your hand if you've ever been affected by gun violence? Look around. So many of us. Can you raise your hand if you know someone who has been killed by gun violence?
I supported the march, but I also felt pressure to speak out about gun control because it seemed like the right thing to do. And because my classmates were doing it. But I also felt like I didn't know about gun laws or policies that could end gun violence. I do care a lot about other issues like equal pay and immigration rights. But if I want to educate others, I need to educate myself. Speaking out about issues I don't know a lot about can be dangerous.
Just starting the conversation isn't enough. And that's a problem.
Sabah Harris also went to Oakland Tech. She's my older sister's best friend. Her mom is an activist and the founder of the Attitudinal Healing Connection Center in West Oakland. The space helps young people find creative outlets through art. So she's involved in her community. But, she says, that doesn't give her the right to claim wokeness.
Being woke is a process. I think people use it as like an adjective to describe like you've reached enlightenment, like you understand systematic racism.
Sabah has seen how social media can be a powerful tool for black organizers. The hashtag Black Lives Matter exploded on social media, and it became a rallying cry around the country. And that hashtag is still used at least 17,000 times a day.
I think it really had this conversation starting, like, do Black Lives Matter?
But Sabah says, for some, the conversation online is where it ends.
Black culture is trendy.
Do anything for clout. They do anything for clout. Do anything for clout. They do anything for clout.
If we look at Migos, Cardi B, they've turned it into something that's cool. And people want to be cool because it makes you accepted by your peers and those who are around you. So I think that people attempt to be woke and end up being fake woke because they're just trying to appeal to the masses and be liked.
Nicholas Mirzoff has studied how digital media affects how we see the world. He's a professor at New York University. He says, to understand this current age of digital activism, you have to go back to 1972. That was the year the first photo showing the entire Earth was shot from space. This galvanized activists around the world.
That photograph just opened a new way of understanding who we were and where we lived. And it came at a moment where globalization was beginning, environmentalism was beginning, and it seemed to encapsulate all of those possibilities for people.
But that was nearly 50 years ago. There are at least 700 million Snapchat photos sent every day. He says we're so saturated by images that photos rarely leave a lasting impact, like that snapshot of Earth once did.
You know, what we see very commonly now is a photograph appears, it creates a storm for a day or two, and then a week later, if you ask somebody about it, they probably have trouble remembering exactly what you were talking about.
He says he's no longer sure that films and photos can bring accountability or justice. Eric Garner's death was captured by cell phone footage in 2014. The footage shows him saying, "I can't breathe," repeatedly while a cop holds him in a chokehold.
Outrage here in New York City. A police officer will not face federal charges in the choking death of Eric Garner 5 years ago. A video of the incident shows...
We can sort of say that we are in a peculiar moment where seeing is no longer believing.
But Nicholas is still hopeful. There are more young people than ever before on this planet, and he sees many of these young people protesting on the streets.
Climate change is not a lie! We won't let our planet die! Climate change is not a lie!
Personally, I've encountered fake woke people everywhere. But there are at least a few informed people I do know who are working to change the world. Simone Ufana is 19 years old and the creator of a coloring book called Color Her Story. Each page depicts an influential woman of color. She uses her platform at Color Her Story on Instagram to inform her audience about social issues today.
So I'm definitely reaching a healthy, big amount of people, and that's growing. And it's a great way to get messages out. It's so instant and fast, and I can reach all these different communities instantly.
Simone says that educating online and taking action in real life go hand in hand.
So not only taking up space with your voice on social media, but taking up space with your body and with your being in these physical spaces that need our bodies there, that need activists there for people to speak out and disrupt.
I've come to realize that being woke is about constantly learning, not thinking you know enough. The people I've talked to for this story all stress the importance of taking time to create change. Liking, retweeting, sharing can only go so far.
That story was reported by Chosung Tenzin. She's a senior at Oakland Technical High School. I was actually one of the organizers of the walkout against gun violence that Chosung mentioned. I felt a sort of pressure to help organize. I was already a student leader involved with student government, so people looked to me in a way, and I didn't want to disappoint. It wasn't that I didn't believe wholeheartedly in what I was doing, but I fell into my leadership role more than I sought it out. Later on, I felt a need to recuse myself from that role, not because I stopped caring about gun violence prevention, but because I didn't have a personal tie to the issue, I felt like an imposter. And another thing, I've always been uncomfortable with the way social media allows for the sensationalism of violence. People have begun to think that simply sharing videos of Black people being murdered by law enforcement is activism, when really all it does is desensitize us as a society to images of Black death. And this isn't to say that there is no value to sharing activist messages through social media, but your activism shouldn't end there. Thanks for listening and tune in again. I'm your host, Samuel Getacho.
TBH team producers were trained and edited by Holly J. McDeed and Kristen McCandless. Episodes drop every week on Monday. Subscribe on your favorite podcast player. Today's Cross Currents team includes Janae Darden, Precious Green, Lisa Morehouse, True Gwynn, Marissa Ortega Welch, and Sarah Lai Sterland. Our engineers are James Rowlands, Tariq Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shirin Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trevney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.